Radio St. Pete presents Typewriter Talks with Maureen McDowell, founder and executive director of Keep St. Pete Lit.
Hello, welcome to Typewriter Talks. This podcast features interviews with writers, poets, and other bookish folks. My name is Maureen McDowell, and I am the founder and executive director of Keep St. Pete Lit, which is a literary arts organization based in St. Petersburg, Florida. On Typewriter Talks, we discuss all kinds of writerly topics, hoping to show you that there is not one right way to be a writer. Today, we are happy to welcome Silk Yasmin. Silk Yasmin is a student of life who loves narrative in all its forms and the artistically strange. Speculative fiction writer, teaching artist for Kitchen Table Literary Arts, Grub Street Writers, and The Porch. She received her MFA in creative writing at the University of Tampa. Her work has appeared in Midnight in Indigo, African Writer Magazine, Ekphrastic Exhibition in Tandem, Back and Forth. Welcome, Silk Yasmin. How are you?
I am great. Super excited to, see what questions you have.
Yeah. So what are you working on right now?
So right now I am working on a novel and stories called Lioness Valkyrie of Ognus. It is a collection of stories with different points of view for each character about a lioness, about this female character. She is the queen of parents, and queen is spelled K-W-E-E-N. And she's ready to take over her father's throne. She's betrothed, and on her betrothal night, her intended is kidnapped. So the story just kind of circles around this magical realm of people with magic and people with inner essence, and there's war and a little bit of politics. So I'm really, really excited to be working on this.
This is so exciting. So how long have you been working on this project?
It started as a journal entry back in 2019. Mm-hmm. And I've kind of just been coming back and forth to it, which I think at first my brain was like, oh, you're writing. I had written it as a short story and shared it with a bunch of people in early 2021 at Readout. And I remember someone telling me, hey, you know, this is a novel, right? And I was like, but I'm not a novelist. I'm a short story writer. And so it's like, I would go away and come back. And this year I've really been dedicated to, you know, telling my brain that it's just, I'm just doing one short story at a time, but it's obviously all within the same universe. So it's been a work, I would say, since about 2019.
That's so exciting. So why did you think you were just a short story writer and not a novelist?
Just because that's my bread and butter. So when I did my MFA, I read a lot of short story collections, and my thesis was a collection of short stories. I've had a few short stories, obviously, as you said, in bio published. So I was like, that's my thing. That's my bread and butter. I'm good at getting in and getting out. And I was just like, oh, because a novel, like, you're looking at it in totality, and like, can my brain do that? So that's why. It's just because I feel more comfortable writing short stories.
I like that idea of getting in and getting out. I feel like that's how I socialize.
Right.
Pop in and pop out. It's like a pop-up shop of Maureen, and then bye, see ya. I love that. So tell us what a typical day looks like for you as a writer.
Oh, wow. As a writer. Well, I do have a full-time 9-to-5. And so usually a lot of my writing is on weekends, or if I go ahead and use some PTO and take a day off. So usually it's going to start with, you know, probably a morning meditation, maybe some journaling, then some coffee for sure. You know, got to get my caffeine fixed. And then, I love writing on and off. I'm all for, like, if the bug bites and, you know, being able to just write for hours. But typically my writing is more of, again, still that get in, get out of, okay, I, you know, wrote this really intense scene for maybe it took me like 45 minutes to an hour. And like, okay, I definitely break before I keep going.
Yeah. I would say I'm a very similar type of writer also. Like, even with editing, I'll get in there and I'd be like, okay, this has been too intense. Like, I have to, if I'm trying to edit multiple things, I'm like, I could do like one poem a day and I need to put it away. And it, you just, I just feel like overloaded. And I'm also a journal writer. So I'm always, I love meeting people that also write in their journals. It's such a wonderful practice.
Absolutely.
So how has your writing process changed over the years?
I think, you know, I used to be, when I first started writing, I used to be very like a inspiration. Like I would wait for the kind of like the muse to bite. And that was the only time I was writing. And I feel that since, you know, in the last 5 or 6 years, I've tried to work on, and I have gotten better. I'm not where I would like to be, but I have gotten better of having like a set time, or either, you know, okay, a word count that I want to hit within a week. And instead of having a word count per day of just saying, okay, well, how many words did I write this week? Of just kind of trying to squeeze that time in and trying to be a little bit more, leaning more into discipline versus inspiration. So I think that's been the big change.
That is a, did you, was there something that came to you that said that you need, you want to work that way? Or was it like a gradual process?
Yeah, probably more so just reading the works of Octavia Butler and how she approaches, you know, writing as a process. And I think she says like, don't wait for the muse, you know, kind of let the muse meet you. Because sometimes that'll happen where I'm like, oh man, you know, I don't really feel, quote unquote, feel like writing, but let me sit down and, you know, listen to some instrumentals and see if I can get in the groove. And usually the muse will meet me there. I haven't really had a writing session where it's like, oh my God, I sat down to write and like, I didn't feel like at the end of it, I still don't feel like writing. Like usually it kind of will happen.
It's interesting. Like if you think about like the visual that she's just like waiting for you to show up and then you don't, she's like, well, fine, I'll do something else.
Exactly. Exactly.
I love that. I love that. So what are some of your major themes and why these themes do you think?
Diversity for sure. In the current work in progress, I've purposely made a point to not describe explicitly what everybody's skin tone is, but in my mind, all my characters are Black and brown. Mm-hmm. And that's so important. I just feel because when I was growing up, I didn't know who Octavia Butler was until I was an adult. Yeah. And I was a huge speculative fiction nerd. I mean, I read Dune, I was into Star Wars, I was into Star, you know, and I didn't see a lot of myself in this genre. So for me, that's very, very important that, you know, having the idea is just representation. And because it's like, you know, Black and brown people are into wizards and dragons like anybody else, right? So for me, that's very important. I think another like theme in my work is probably the theme of magic in the sense of everybody can be an alchemist, of, you know, taking a situation and being able to transform it in a way that you want and desire, and the concept that life is a co-creation between the forces that exist and create, and then also with us, you know, it's a in tandem conversation. And also probably magic and science. I have magic, science, spirituality. Those are lots of themes that usually aren't separate in my work. They usually kind of interweave into each other, because I feel that, you know, metaphysics is, my brother is an astrophysicist. So I love getting to kind of like talk to him about things, but just the concept of metaphysics and how it affects people and the fact that like, why does music feel like a religious experience? Like why, you know, and it all really comes down to like the vibrations of our literal atoms. So those are a few of the themes.
I love that too, the space that speculative fiction allows for us to dream bigger than just our very concrete reality that we're living in. And, you know, you can dream up new worlds and new possibilities. I mean, like in many ways, use the force is like my moral code. Mm-hmm. And it's even keeping me afloat, like through these kinds of, you know, I mean, you could say that it's always dark times in some ways, but I'm always like the dark side never wins. Like it might win temporarily, but the force will prevail. That's what I tell people. So I love that. That this is the genre that you're drawn to. And it's funny because I just ordered about 200 books to put into our book boxes in South St. Pete. And a lot of the book, I mean, all the books are Black and Brown children are being represented, but it's so cool because there's several that are like wizards and, you know, those types of stories in it. I'm hearing you say that you grew up and you weren't seeing yourself necessarily reflected in books. And it just makes me so happy that these books are coming and we can put them out for free into the community. And these kids, you know, there might be a next Octavia Butler that is getting the books from Johnny Ruth Clark Health Center from our book boxes. So I love that.
Yeah. It
warms my heart, makes me feel like, yes, fight the power. So how do you get your idea for a story? Do you hear a line or do you hear a character talk to you?
Different. It depends on the story. But usually I would say most of my stories are very character driven. I believe that one of my strengths, if not my top strength as a writer, is dialogue. I'm pretty good at really tight one-on-one, like nothing else in the room, just two characters, you know, going back and forth and having a conversation. So a lot of my work tends to be character driven. And so I'll kind of like think of a, like, oh, this is kind of cool. You know, like this character I see in my, you know, like my current protagonist, Leona, Queen Apparent, Princess Valkyrie. I will kind of like have this idea of like what a character looks like or what their body movement is or, you know, them in a scene. And then I'm kind of like, okay, I have to figure out what's going on with this character. Yeah, most of my story ideas are like, oh, this character that's going through this. Like I have a short story called Silver Tongues that, I have a short story called Wedding Rings and Pawn Shops about a guy who goes into a pawn shop and finds, like, he puts on a wedding ring and he's transported into that person's life. And wow. He like tries another ring and it's a different life. And it's just really, cause it's like at that point, he just didn't know who he was, and kind of with exploring other people's lives, he kind of pieced together who he was. So I really like character driven narratives.
I love that. I love that. And it's when you're describing your stories, it feels very cinematic to me. Like I could see the visual of the guy putting the rings on and going into the different lives. And
yeah, I pull a lot of inspiration from movies. I'm a huge movie buff. And I feel like there's just so many things. I personally like to, in general, pull from other media. Like I love, like, poets do certain things really, really well. Nonfiction writers do certain things, just, you know, just different genres require different things. So I try to always pull and learn from any genre that I can. And I'm a huge movie buff. So a lot of times whenever I feel like I'm struggling with like, how does this look? I'll like sit back or either like literally sometimes I will take break from writing and go watch a movie or go like, you know, YouTube a scene to kind of just get that feel if I need like an emotional feel.
Yeah, I get that. I get that. My kid is a huge movie, but I am too, but my kid is like extra movie buff, like watches. I think he's going to see Oppenheimer. We're going tomorrow and it's like his third time of seeing it. So, yeah. But he's also a visual artist. So his visual arts have like the whole, like he'll do a picture of a character, but then it has the whole background, the whole set is done behind it. It's just really cool to hear how different people like come to writing. So are you someone who plots your stories out, or are you more of like the go with the flow type?
Go with the flow usually. I like to, like, because even if I have an idea of like, hey, I think this story is going to do this and I think this character is going to do this, I really, really try to be the type of writer that listens to her characters, because I've literally had like, oh, I want this character to do and say this. And I tell my students all this time, because I also as a teaching artist, you know, I teach adults creative writing, and I always tell them like, listen to your characters, like, and if I tell you to listen to the voices in other fields, that might be a little strange, but when it comes to creativity, like listen to that voice. So I might have an idea, like I was writing, like with this current project, the main character, and I had written that they're like second in command, they're like royal guard, that they were like just best friends. And it was like, I think like a second or third story later, I was like, no, they need to be cousins. Like I need them to have a blood bond. And it just, because of this, you know, world and blood and lineage meaning so much, I was like, no, this needs to be like a blood cousin. And I let that, and that happened organically. So I knew what I wanted, but then I also, I'm like, oh man, I usually end up leaning into, okay, this just feels right. And this just fits.
Yeah. And then maybe down the road, the story will explain itself.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That's kind of life too. Like, oh, I need to talk to this person, or I need to change this. And you're like, what? And I'm starting to look at life like that, like a poem, like the poem hasn't necessarily filled itself in yet, cause I maybe haven't lived it. And so I'm starting to like, look at life like that. But that's one of the gifts of being a writer. We kind of get skilled in like waiting for something to unfold. Mm-hmm. You might not even have lived a character, you know, you haven't lived something to be able to be inspired by the story. It's really a great way to live as far as I'm concerned. If you can handle the kind of unknown aspect to it, but
yeah. Absolutely.
So what would you tell your younger writer self?
You're on the right path. When I was applying for my MFA, I remember feeling very, very self-conscious about my undergrad degree not being in English. Mm-hmm. And I just was like, oh man, you know, I'm not an English major. Like, what is going to happen? But really, me not being an English major actually influenced my work and my writing and my approach in a different way, in a way that was so beneficial. And I think that for me personally, I don't think there's anything that I would change. But I had a lot of stress about making the quote unquote right choice. And I think that, you know, moving in alignment is the only right choice. And the individual moments, as long as you're moving in alignment, there is no wrong choice, in my opinion, because it's a matter of, hey, does this align with what my overall trajectory is? And then even a lot of times, if you think that like, oh yeah, that's not, you know, that's not leading to the life XYZ, but it's like, here I am, you know what I mean? Like, so my undergrad degree is in advertising. Right now I work for an advertising agency, but I'm on track to be a college professor. And I mean, yeah, I could have taken a quote unquote another role, but you know, another road, but I feel like my road is my own road. And I think that it's very easy to be like, oh man, I need to do this just right or just perfect or this kind of way. And it's like, no, you don't. The only thing you have to do is be in alignment and that's it. And the rest will fall into place.
Yeah. I was talking to my boyfriend about that today. Like, cause at this time of year, I'm always like, I need to get an MFA. And then I'm like, I don't want to get in debt. Like, I don't want to get this like $40,000 debt on top of what debt I already have. And then I was like, I can't believe that there's not another possibility for me that I don't have to get $40,000 in debt and still get my goals reached. Like, you know, like that kind of mindset. But I love that idea of, as long as you're in alignment, that the right choices will be made. And also, as far as being in advertising, there is an element of sales, of being a teacher. So sure. I could see that coming back to being like, oh, I'm so glad I have this degree, you know?
Yeah. Cause when I talk to other writers and they're like, oh man, you know, the promotion part and the social media, yeah. And I'm just like, oh yeah, that's like second nature. Like I'm fine. You know what I mean? Yeah. I do have a creative partner, Theory, who helps. She's built my website and she's done my flyers and she's just amazing. And we're just on the same page creatively. But when it comes down to like, okay, hey, I need to like promote this. It's like, oh, okay. Like, you know, compared to, I know there's a lot of writers that are like, oh my goodness, I also have to be a marketing manager, you know?
Yeah. It's true. It's a whole different part of your brain. And it's those of us that are introverts, it's like, ugh. So that's what a gift. So, this may be a two-part question. What are you reading right now? And or who are some of your favorite authors and poets?
Okay, so sad to say I'm not reading right now, but I will be because I got a bunch of books for my birthday. My birthday was on Sunday.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. Real season. So I got a bunch of books on my birthday. I'm probably gonna start reading N.K. Jameson, one of the best contemporary authors right now. I read her The City We Make. The City We Became, her duology. So I got The City We Make as a birthday gift. So I will be reading that soon. I have to, the biggest of biggest kisses to P. DeJelly Clark. He is the author of Master of Gin, Black God's Drums, The Haunting of Tramcar 15. He is really the way, he's also a history professor. So he does a lot of speculative historical fiction. So it's super cool because A Master in Gin is set in 1920s Egypt, but it's very, very steampunk because there's certain technologies. So it's the coolest overlap of different things. Dude is just cool. Suyi Davies, I read his David Mogul God Hunter, and I teach from it all the time. And I've read it a couple times, but it's just the way in which he pulls African mythology, pantheon of the Yoruba faith, which my grandmother practiced when I was very, very young. So I had that emotional connection. He's doing really, really great work. I think I'm halfway through Son of the Storm. And he has a new book coming out that I believe is in that same universe. And then, of course, to throw it all the way back, Octavia Butler, anything it's like Octavia said that, I love when people are here's this new crazy headline of what's going on with science and eugenics and everything else. And then it's just Octavia Butler was writing about that in the 70s. You know what I mean? Or she projected that this was going to happen. So,
yeah, I read her in the last year. And I am sad to say I had not written anything by her. And I was just wow. I was what a brain, what a mind, what bravery, I was just thank you. And also it's terrified me. But it's also I talked to my kid about the apocalypse shows and TV shows that are out. And it's this leveling, this great leveling, and mm-hmm. that everything is kind of on equal playing field, and it's all different types of people involved. And that's why people are really drawn to that, because I think at heart, I believe that we all know that we want everybody, there's a lot of diversity in the world and we all bring different gifts, and it's a lot more interesting that way. So that blew me open, her books, reading her. And so I love that. That is somebody that you reference a lot, and that, and she's still modern, the things she says is still coming up in conversations. And that is the power of literature, the timelessness of it. So,
exactly.
So one more question, and then we'll hear some of your writing. What would you say is your elevator pitch or your lightning strike advice for other writers?
Your intuition's everything. It's great having beta readers. It's great having a circle that you trust, that you know isn't trying to hurt you with their critiques. But always it's that voice of always let the characters tell you what they want to do. Let the plot tell you what it wants to do. Don't force it, because the reader will pick up on that very quickly. There's nothing worse than, in my opinion, than reading a book, watching a movie, and being this character in a million years would never do this. And the way in which that this writer has tried to tie these very flimsy strings together to make me believe this character would do this, no. So I would say, let the characters speak to you and tell you where they want to go, for sure.
Intuition. Woohoo. I love it. So let's hear some of your work.
All righty. So this is from the title story. This is from the collection, and this particular story is called The Lioness and the Goddess. And this basically is the center of the story. So the way that I'm kind of mapping this out is this story is going to exist in when I do the layout, it'll be in the middle of all the stories, just because, there'll be stories before it and after it that kind of tie it all together. I don't care about linear timelines. I am a big fan of nonlinear timelines. So that's why I'm okay, I'm excited. So this is not the beginning, but it's not the end either. A gold griffin with a quill in one set of talons and a Sumeter sword in the other hung from my neck. It was as heavy as any full set of armor I'd ever worn. Around Athene's neck was a black Tugzin raven with a scroll in its mouth. "Princess," my father said to Athene, "you may approach your intended." The drums began again as I kneeled and bowed my head. I could hear her indigo dress brushing the floor, her footsteps hushed. She'd been a dancer her entire life, finding joy in the movements as I did while training or fighting. It was one of the many things we had in common. The drums hushed as she stood above me. "Leona, the lioness, Valkyrie, queen apparent," she announced. "These are the names and titles bestowed upon you over the years." There was a pause. I felt a hand on the crown of my head. "I choose you and thus add wife to your list. You may rise and accept my gift of betrothal." I lifted my eyes before standing to my full height. In her lifted shoes, my eyes reached her nose. She looked even more breathtaking up close. Her head shaved to the scalp, highlighted the prominent cheekbones and almond-shaped eyes that were dark and easy for me to get lost in. She reached behind her neck to remove the raven, and I followed suit with my griffin pendant. I placed my griffin around her neck, and she placed her raven on mine. There was a pregnant pause before we shared a smile, then a kiss that caused the entire hall to rupture into cheers and whistles. "And now we feast to celebrate this joyous occasion," my father boomed as the food began to appear on the table. "Come along now," Athene said to me, grabbing my hand. "I'm starved." I smiled at my brothers, who with the other mages used magic to place the food in front of the guests. The night seemed to go on forever in the way that only perfect nights can. There were delectable foods, wine, and mead overflowing, the drummers playing music that was the heartbeat of the celebration. After the wine and mead had been consumed, the drummers traded places with the harpist. At the first strum, I extended my hand to Athene, who took it and pressed against me. "Are you enjoying tonight?" I asked her. "Would I be smiling if I wasn't?" "Probably not," I chuckled. "But I just wanted to make sure. My parents taught me to never assume anything, especially in love. I have a tendency to not always say what's on my mind." I looked to the side away from her. "You're safe," she said, using a slender finger to turn my head back to her. "You can always speak your truth to me, my love." She smiled and the world was gone around us. The music muted, the conversations hushed. "I've been waiting for you my entire life," I told her. Then you should have proposed after your naming day. I would have accepted the intendedship even if we were young." "What? I've been in love with you since that night. So why did you wait until last year to send your courtship?" "My vision," she told me. "I was ready for you, but you're not for me. But you weren't ready for me. And spirit said that if I reached out before the appointed time, our paths would diverge and converge at a different moment." "Why didn't you tell me this before?" "Ah, spirit. May I kiss you?" I asked. "I appreciate you asking." I touched my lips to hers. I opened my eyes first and saw the smirk before I could say anything else. The grip she had on my hand tightened like no other pressure I'd ever felt. Her eyes were clenched tight, eyebrows sinking low. "Athene?" She didn't answer, so I said her name sterner, gathering the attention of her mother. The white-haired woman rushed over to us. "She's having a vision," she told me. Athene's eyes popped open, completely white. "They're coming," a voice said, but it wasn't the rich timbre that was hers. "Spirit," her mother replied. Then an explosion burst through the hall. It threw us all to the ground, my head knocking the onyx, blurring my vision with ringing in my ears. I could hear the shouts of my officers and the screams of the non-combat guests. Then there were clanging swords. I turned over to see a metal creature ready to bring the hammer down on me, but its head crumpled and fell over. I looked up to see my cousin Nemu standing behind it, their black gloves off, exposing glowing red hands. I blinked, rubbed my eyes. My mother was fighting hand to hand with someone in an orange tunic, my father with a short sword slashing away at enemies. I saw Athene laying in the middle of the mayhem, still unconscious. I pulled my sword, hacking at the orange assailant that dared block my stride to get to her. That's when a portal opened up next to her and I ran as fast as I could. She was blinking when my hands found her forearm, but the portal was already sucking her in. I was usually all strength, but she just kept slipping from me. I yelled and roared as my blood felt like it was setting on fire, my eyes aflames as my canines extended. I was reaching deep into my lion essence, but I wasn't strong enough. "I will find you," I said as my eyes teared up. "I did it once, I will do it again." "I know," she said, and then she was gone. Thank you.
Ooh. That was so wonderful. Thank you. I was like in it.
Like, no. I had to cut it in half. That's a full story. I think I had to cut to have enough time.
Oh, so there's more to it.
There's more to it. Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun. Oh, my goodness. Well, thank you so very much for taking this time out of your busy day and life and writing time to let us interview you. I really appreciate it. And thank you for your perspective. And thank you, everyone, for tuning into Typewriter Talks. We interview writers every week. And if you want to know more about Keep St. Pete Lit, you can go to keepstpetelit.org. And if you like what you hear, please consider donating to help continue to keep this programming going forward. So thank you everyone for tuning in, and we will see you all next week.
Typewriter Talks features interviews with writers, poets, and other bookish folks. It is hosted by Maureen McDowell, founder and executive director of Keep St. Pete Lit, which is a literary arts organization based in St. Petersburg, Florida. Listen in to hear discussions on all kinds of writerly topics. Our goal is to show you that there is not one right way to be a writer. Learn more about Keep St. Pete Lit at www.keepstpetelit.org.